Hello and welcome to the Four Comic Junkies podcast. When the comics aren't enough and you need a little extra fix. I am your host, JJ Hodges. And this, my dear friends, is our very first episode. We are going to be discussing the Elseworlds graphic novel Kingdom Come by DC Comics. Side note, this intro was recorded later than, you know, the actual episode was, simply because at the time I didn't have a script and I didn't really know what I was doing. I was just like, So I apologize in advance. You're going to hear me kind of stumble through introducing my guest and also talking about the topic in general. I hope you'll still find it interesting and fun, though. We've had a lot of fun doing this. We're excited to bring a lot of content to you. We've recorded several episodes. I'm really looking forward to you guys hearing it. And if you have any feedback, please, you know, let me know. You can find me on Twitter at Four Comic Junkies or Instagram at Four Comic Junkies. You know, it's this is exciting. So like I said, we're talking Kingdom Come. I will say that there are spoilers for the comic, but, you know, the thing's been out for like 23 years or something. So you've had plenty of time to catch up. So if we ruin something for you, I'm not that sorry. Because again, you've had time to catch up. Anyway, I hope you guys enjoy this episode. I hope you'll end up subscribing and listening to more episodes, you know, giving us feedback. I'm really excited about this. Okay, let's get started. Welcome to the Four Comic Junkies podcast. My name is JJ Hodges, and here with me today is my very good friend, Jesse James, as he's known around town. Jesse, how are you doing today?
So good. Happy to be here.
All right, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I am a filmmaker of all kinds, short films, long films, but also a serious comic book fan, which I attribute a lot of to you, since we've been friends for so long, and I would say you are 100% more of a fan than I am, and so by extension, just being around you, I've learned so much about the superhero world.
Well, that's very kind of you to say. I'm really excited to get this started. This is our very first episode. What I wanted to do with this particular podcast is bring people in that are, you know, fans of certain comic books, certain characters, certain movies, and really dig deep, not just into the story of it, but the themes around it, which I think is much more interesting than just saying, oh, well, the art is really great and the story is really great. We can really dig deep. And today's topic is going to be Kingdom Come by Mark Waid and Alex Ross, published by DC as part of their Elseworlds banner, although now it's DC Black Label because, you know, rebranding is...
It's such a thing these days.
It's what happens every few years. But it's one of the classics. I think every single fan of DC would point to it and say it's in their top 10. It's definitely in my top 10. The story itself comes from, it was written in the late 90s, like 96, I believe. And it was really a reaction to different, like, I guess, quote-unquote, anti-heroes, vigilantes that were around at the time, you know, that were really popular, like Spawn or the Punisher, you know, that, you know, were less goody-goody than, say, Batman or Superman, that just kind of took the law into their own hands, you know, and Alex and Mark really wanted to tell a story that seemed like, you know, that type of thinking, you know, isn't what a hero should be. A hero should have the morals and values of Superman. And I think there's a lot to it that's like, kind of like Watchmen, where Watchmen was a deconstruction of comic books in general. I think Kingdom Come is a deconstruction of Superman. And, you know, we'll get into all that. The other thing doing with this podcast is talking about, we'll have different segments. Today's segment will be, you know, or the segments will be called comics and then you know, the topic. The topic today being comics and faith and humanity, because I think this story is definitely about faith and humanity as well as faith in humanity. And it's, I recently reread it and I was floored by just how much I could take from it as an adult versus when I first read it as a kid. So let's talk a little bit about when did you first read this comic?
So I remember you owning it in high school, which would have been the early 2000s, and you let me borrow it, and I fell in love with it. And I think anyone who's seen, you know, this is a pretty thick graphic novel, you know, a lot bigger than a normal comic book issue.
Right.
But I think the thing that draws people in right away is the art by Alex Ross, who, I mean, if any of you have ever seen Alex Ross's paintings, they're just phenomenal.
They're very photorealistic. He's a fantastic artist. I have a book on him where, you know, he's been drawing pretty much his whole life. You know, they showed little clips of when he was like 7 years old and these kind of, you know, stick figure drawings that little kids do. And then as he got older, they got better and better and better. And he's still painting today. And it's funny to me, you know, a little off topic, when you go to like different comic cons, he's his art is like
super unique.
It is, but it's like prestige stuff. It's like stuff you'd see at a museum, and it's priced that way as well.
Well, it's rare to see art that even looks like this.
Right.
I think
it is
for sure.
And that comes from obviously painstaking work that he's obviously very passionate about, and it shows on the pages. This story in particular, I think is kind of the future of the Silver Age of comics, where, you know, it's clear that the Flash is Jay Garrick as opposed to Barry Allen, and Green Lantern is Alan Scott versus like Hal Jordan or whoever else, and also Dick Grayson being kind of the only Robin mentioned. You know, there's no Jason Todd or Tim Drake or anything. So I think it's definitely an extension of that, which, you know, I think is Alex Ross's like favorite stuff to begin with. So that's why he chose to go that direction. For me, the story came from. To me, the story, I remember just being a kid and getting into comic books and kind of having like a wish list of books I wanted. And, you know, do you remember Media Play when that was open?
Who doesn't?
Yeah. I would, you know, every time I would go there, I would just plant myself in front of the graphic novel section, and there were just books I just wanted and stuff I read about that seemed like, if you're a DC fan, this is what you need to buy. And to me, it was like, okay, well, that's one of them. So, you know, with like a gift certificate or birthday money or whatever, I would get a few every few months, you know, for Christmas, my birthday, et cetera, my allowance, whatever. And it, and this was one that I read and I just, you know, absolutely fell in love with. And I love the idea of the older generation kind of having to school the newer generation. But again, getting into our topic today about faith and humanity, it's much deeper than that. It's much deeper than just, you know, the old guard coming back. It very much is they come back because they, you know, it.
Well, why don't you give a brief synopsis of the plot?
Sure, yeah.
Give some context.
The story, it starts with our main character is Norman McKay, who's kind of a jaded pastor who was very good friends with Wesley Dodds, who is the Sandman from the Justice Society. And Dodds was haunted by visions of the future. And when he passed, those visions are now cursed on Norman. And he doesn't know what to make of them. Until the Spectre shows up and says, "You're here to bear witness to the future."
And it's very biblical. The visions he sees are literally Armageddon and the end times. And the artwork, it's always like shadows, so you can't really make out what you're seeing, but it's fire and brimstone and all these forces against each other. And so you have this pastor who went from kind of not necessarily lost his way, but he's questioning other, you know, other forms of faith. And there's even a scene where his congregation kind of feels, they can feel it, where he hasn't...
his doubts.
Yeah, his doubts.
It's really, it's a reflection on the times that they live in, where they're literally watching superpowered beings beat the crap out of each other
right outside.
And it's scary for them to think, what can we believe in when these beings are just destroying our world? And of course, where's Superman in all this? 10 years prior, the Joker had killed Lois Lane, and then the Joker was killed by a new superhero called Magog. And Superman kind of took him to trial and said, it's not okay that he did this. But basically, the public was against Superman. They said, no, Magog was right. You know, he saved lives by killing the Joker. And Superman was just sort of just heartbroken by it, you know, and put himself in self-imposed exile. And it's not till, you know, present day in the comic, Wonder Woman comes to him and says, we need you. You're needed back, you know, in the land of the living, basically. He's been off in the Fortress of Solitude. He's made it out to look like the old Kent farm. And he's like, I'm happy here. And she's like, the rest of the world is in danger. We need you. So, you know, he finally watches, you know, different news clips and he says, okay, I'm needed. And it's interesting when he comes back, it's supposed to be this moment of joy and yay, our hero is back. And Norman sees a dark vision of the future. He says, no, there's something not right here.
Yeah, it has a really good pace. So Norman starts seeing these visions and then the specter attaches himself to him. Mm-hmm. And there's this whole Christmas Carol kind of Ebenezer Scrooge play where he's taking Norman around and looking at like different renditions of the future.
Right.
And he's like the spirit guide. But there's also this really good pace with the just the world building. So if you picture like that perfect Silver Age comic world where the Justice League is always there and fights all the world threats, it's, I don't know, 15 years after that. But what's different is that there are like 50 times as many superheroes, and they're always talked about as being like the children of the heroes of yesterday. So there's all these super-powered beings, like you said, always fighting with each other on like a gang level playing field,
and they don't care for collateral damage.
Right.
So
people are getting hurt left and right.
Yes.
And
that's really what brings Superman out.
Right.
He says that if you're going to have your powers, you have to use them responsibly. And in their minds, they think they are. They're like, well, we're fighting the bad guys. We're beating them. Who cares? And it's interesting where you see Superman struggle. You see Superman's side of it and you see their side of it and how they can't come to a middle ground because Superman just punishes them and throws them in a large prison called the Gulag and just says and tries to re-educate them on how to use their powers. And of course, none of them are into that at all.
Right. So after Superman comes back, the alliances of the story kind of branch off into three different paths. And
there's the Justice League, there's the Mankind Liberation front, which is Lex Luthor and Vandal Savage, and then eventually Batman.
Right. And, so when Magog kills Lois and Superman leaves, the Justice League kind of falls apart. There's no heroes. It's like the crime in Gotham, but it's worldwide.
Right.
And Superman comes back and the other Justice League members come back. And at the same time, we start to see all the old villains creep out of the shadows,
right,
like Lex Luthor, and he's assembled them all. And then Batman is revealed and he kind of rules Gotham with these giant bat robots and keeps everyone in check. There's basically no crime at all.
Right.
And, you know, he's really playing up that fear card. And all of this basically escalates where all these factions are kind of thinking their way is right. And Superman basically says, you have two choices. You're going to fall in line or I'm going to lock you up.
Right.
And like you said, he builds the gulag. It gets to capacity like immediately. Mm-hmm. And this whole time, Norman is seeing all this. And even though the Justice League is back and they're making these progress on trying to stop all the fighting, Norman knows that the worst is still yet to come.
It's interesting because what it is that there's the Justice League kind of on high. They're in Green Lantern's like self-made headquarters in outer space, and they're just kind of going down and clearing out the metahumans, and it scares the humans because it's like, okay, we have these literal gods coming down and just, you know, doing whatever they want, and that terrifies them, which rightfully so.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one of the things I love about the book is that there's, you know, Mark Waid has said this in interviews where it's hard not to agree with Lex Luthor in some cases. It's like, you can't say, well, Lex is wrong and Superman is right. It's like, well, Lex has a point at least that if there's this superpowered alien that can just do whatever he wants, what is to stop him from taking over? And of course, Superman would never do that. Mm-hmm. We as the audience know that. But in our world today, would we really know that? That's something that's explored actually in the Man of Steel film that and Batman versus Superman that I think was a really good it's a really good plot for Superman, the idea of, you know, the God among men. And of course, Superman doesn't see himself that way, but it's hard for us as the humans not to see him that way.
Right. We've all come to love him for the hero that he is.
Right.
But realistically, if there were such a being, they actually do. They do that whole segment in Man of Steel where it's different news stations and speakers all kind of weighing in on.
In Batman vs. Superman, they do that.
Yeah, you're right. Batman vs. Superman.
Which is my favorite scene in the film because I think that that's 100% realistic, that exact thing would happen. One of the things I was thinking about with this book that I think is really, really interesting is during the Mankind Liberation Front scenes, I think it's Green Arrow who says, why don't we just shoot a kryptonite missile at Superman and just end this? And Lex says, well, over the years, all the solar radiation he's absorbed, kryptonite doesn't quite pack the punch that it used to. Basically, you know, he's at the height of his powers. I thought about that line and rereading the story, I was like, it's so interesting to hear somebody say that, and it's probably true, when I think this story is Superman at his most vulnerable. You know, he's kind of, and it shows that, you know, towards the end of the story, he's just a wreck, you know. Mm. He's lost his faith in humanity, and he's, you know.
It seems like he's trying to use his old methods of just good will overcome. We need everyone to get on board with this.
Right.
And Wonder Woman's kind of the voice of reason saying what's about to happen is going to be the biggest conflict we've ever seen. And we need to get ready as warriors,
right,
to face that. And he cannot accept it. And it's kind of what escalates the conflict for him to that climactic point where he has to overcome.
Right. And it's right away that, I mean, the costume is striking. I'm actually wearing the shirt with the,
it's very nice,
the S. I love it. But the costume right away, and his look in general, he's got the gray, which I love, you know, the gray in his hair, I mean, is very striking. The blue and the red is much more muted than
it's more of like a navy.
Yeah, than we're used to seeing versus like the, because there's flashback scenes where they show Superman in the past and he does have the brighter colors. But, you know, even the S is just, it's very, very different.
Mm-hmm. It's more angular.
Mm-hmm. And it's black as opposed to yellow. So there, you know, there really isn't the primary colors. And, you know, he looks like a disappointed father.
Yeah. And again, the artwork, it's so just aesthetically pleasing.
Yeah.
Like you can kind of feel all these themes.
Mm-hmm.
While reading this well-written story.
Yeah. It the it's clear the work that went into it, and it's not accidental. It's very
intentional.
It's very intentional, sure. and that means a lot to readers, especially people like us that we reread this story every so often, and we can find new things to really dig into it and love about it, and you know, where it's like the first time you read it, it's like, wow, this is a great story, but then more and more you get into it and you're like, oh wow, this is,
yeah, rereading it recently, there's so many nuanced little nuggets of mm-hmm. fun, tons of fan service. There's sure. some characters that don't have a main role, but they show up for a few pages, like Martian Manhunter.
Yeah.
And he finds these creative ways of putting them into this, you know, fictional future
yeah.
of a fictional universe
right.
where, you know, some of them are broken, some of them have just become out of touch, and it's so great.
One of my favorite bits in the story is when they're trying to find a place for, you know, to house all their prisoners, and they go to Apocalypse, and by the silhouette you think they're talking to Darkseid, and it's actually Orion. And
yeah.
in the comics, Orion and Kalibak were the sons of the High Father and Darkseid, and they traded sons as a truce, and Kalibak
at their birth, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Kalibak accepted his role as a monster on Apocalypse. He kind of loves it. Whereas Orion, growing up on New Genesis as one of the new gods, he's always kind of had the chip on his shoulder of being Darkseid's son and just angry. And he's been in several different Justice League incarnations over the years. Actually a really great character. But seeing him in that role where he's accepted his place as his father's son and he's the ruler of Apocalypse, and there's some level of peace there, which is an interesting thought that, you know, he could grow up and accept, you know, his nature versus nurture.
Yeah, and what Apocalypse, he rules, does he rule it kind of differently? It's,
yeah,
everyone, the panel I remember really well, and I thought it was so brilliant and such a fresh idea, was I think Superman's kind of like overlooking Apocalypse, and mm-hmm. you kind of see the street level, and there is this person on a soapbox. Normally, you know, you see the guy with the picket sign saying the end is nigh,
mm-hmm.
you know, we need to repent. And it's that same dynamic, but this character is on their soapbox and they're shouting out that you as people on this planet are actually free. Freedom is the way.
Mm-hmm.
And so the idea is that the whole populace of the planet rejects freedom 100%. They are told what to do by the ruler, and they think that is the way. And it's kind of like a flip of our society,
yeah,
where we respect our freedom and we would oppose any kind of oppression that way.
Right.
Such an interesting idea. I think you could span off a whole story just about that.
Yeah. I've always been surprised that there's been very little follow-up to this. There was a follow-up called The Kingdom, which I never read, but I heard was bad. and I couldn't really even tell you anything about it other than that's the name of it. The only other follow-up I ever read was in the Justice Society comics. Jeff Johns mm-hmm. brought The Kingdom Come Superman to the main DC universe, and his, you know, kind of bleak worldview versus their kind of optimism. And there was a character called Gog, who Magog was based off of, who's like a god among Earth trying to, you know, replenish the Earth and make it better. And all he asked for in return was to be worshipped, and the heroes kind of had issue with that.
And I'll just throw in, I love that reference because Gog and Magog are actually, from my understanding, biblical beings.
Mm-hmm.
I think they were older generations of Goliath. They were basically two of the giants,
mm-hmm.
and they were bad people.
Yeah. The interesting thing about when Superman finally does confront Magog, I'm going to get a little off topic here, because I always thought this was really funny. My friend Corey and I, we talked about this story a long, long time ago. And we used to play HeroClix a lot, which I think he still does. I didn't even know it was still around until a couple years ago. But yeah, in a sense, the way I always kind of jokingly described it, it's like chess with superheroes. You know, each character has their own powers, and you know they can fight each other on their maps. And there was a Kingdom Come expansion pack, and Magog was one of the most powerful characters, which I always thought, and Corey and I agreed, that it was very strange that he was considered so powerful, considering he doesn't really do anything in the book. You don't really see him do that much.
You know. I had the Shazam HeroClix.
Mm-hmm.
It was super powerful.
Oh, yeah.
I was very proud of it.
Yeah, that was a good one. I don't know if I had any of them. I don't remember. I mean, that was like, you know, like 15 years ago or something. But anyway, but what I loved is when Superman does confront Magog, because there's an instance where he and some of the other metahumans are fighting a radioactive villain in Kansas, and then the villain, they kill the villain, but not realizing that it releases, basically causing a nuclear explosion.
Yeah, that I think that's what actually brings Superman out, is they're all fighting, and basically all of Kansas
yeah.
is leveled and mm-hmm. becomes this radioactive wasteland, and right. like tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of people die.
Yeah, and Superman holds Magog responsible, and there's a great moment when Superman confronts him, and Magog just lays in on him and says, "You couldn't be Superman anymore. They expected me to be Superman, and I couldn't do it." And he kind of tries to shoot at Superman with his, you know, staff, and Superman just...
Yeah, it's very suspenseful, because when Superman comes back, everyone knows he's going to have to face down Magog for real this time. Because I think when he first left, he challenged him, and Superman rejected it and left.
Yeah, yes.
So it was like this thing that never happened, and then it became like, oh, the death match is finally going to happen, and Magog comes out like guns blazing, and he's provoking him, and when it happens, Magog folds like right away.
It's almost as if Magog is expecting, it's like a suicide by cops thing, you know, where he almost expects Superman to just kill him instantly. That's the vibe I got from it, at least with reading it.
But clearly he holds the deaths of all those people.
Yeah.
He thinks he's responsible, and that's when he says, like, I failed. I can't do this. Maybe you were right.
Yeah. I think he says, I can't be you. I can't be Superman. And Superman, it's sad, because it seems like he sort of learns the wrong lesson from that fight, because Wonder Woman tries to console him, and he says, we're at war. And Superman has finally accepted, okay, this isn't just, we can't just be peaceful about this and try and stop these people. We have to, like, imprison them, and
he holds on to the idea that we still don't have to kill people, but we need to be more forceful,
right,
with the way we do things.
And you know, and then that's what leads into what we were talking about when they try to find places for the prisoners. And it's funny, because you know, we were talking about the apocalypse scene, and there's also a scene where they go to Atlantis and ask Arthur, you know, Aquaman, for help, and he declines. I never found that scene as interesting, just because it's just pretty straightforward. It's like, you know, we need your help. And he's like, the surface world is not my problem, which has always bothered me about Aquaman. Just side note, it's like when people do stories like that, it's like, okay, well, you come from the surface world, and also it's up there, it's polluting your oceans, it is your problem. But, you know, that's a topic for another day. But you know, that's basically what happens in that scene. And then they find a way to, I forget how they do it exactly, but they clean up Kansas of the radiation, and they build the Gulag, which is, again, Alex Ross's fan service moment, where he draws it in the shape of the Legion of Doom headquarters from the old Super Friends cartoon, which, again, if you ever really dig into Alex Ross's work, he's a massive Super Friends fan. Mm-hmm. He did a follow-up to this several years later called Justice, and it basically was the cast of the Super Friends, but he framed it in a more adult way, where they were the the Justice League and the Legion of Doom. And that's something we can talk about at a different day. That's a really good comic as well. But it's clear his love for these characters probably started with Super Friends back in like the 60s. And I remember watching that cartoon when I was a kid, and I fell like head over heels in love with it. I was like, oh, this is so great. And I watch it now and it's incredibly dated, but at the time, you know, when you're a little kid, you know, you're excited about superhero stuff. And I think that's what's great about a comic like this is that, sure, you can pick it up and go, look at the pretty pictures. But then as you get older, you can go, wow, there's themes I can relate to in my life. Again, going back to, you know, having faith, it's throughout the story, it's Norman kind of questioning his faith and being, like you said, the Ebenezer Scrooge of it. He and Spectre are just kind of watching and nobody can see them. Or hear them.
Not that he is bitter like Scrooge,
right?
But more that he's just a passenger to everything that's going on,
right?
To what he's seeing, and he doesn't know how to help. He's basically this old man who's seeing terrible visions of Armageddon,
yeah,
and being shown these just massive situations that are beyond his scope.
And, you know, it's like the fate of the universe is in your hands, and he's like, why me, throughout the story. And it's not until the end that he kind of figures it out. Another character that plays into the whole hero or man versus God aspect of it in a really interesting way is Captain Marvel, or Shazam. Well, in this story, he was still legally allowed to be called Captain Marvel. But
I still call him Captain Marvel.
I didn't really think anything of it until I guess somebody on Twitter mentioned, well, what are they going to call him? They can't call him Shazam, because every time he says, my name is Shazam, he's just going to turn into a kid again. And that made me laugh. I was like, oh, that's true, isn't it? Like, he'd have to come up with a new superhero name. So you know, Billy Batson, who in the past, when the Justice League was at the height of their powers and everything, was just a boy who could summon the powers of Shazam, and become this, you know, perfect. He was called Earth's Mightiest Mortal, and now in the present day of the comic, he's
an
adult, but he's been brainwashed by Lex Luthor to be very docile and.
He's basically like a manservant butler to Lex Luthor.
And Lex has poisoned his mind, making him think that superheroes are bad.
But it's actually not revealed who he is at first.
Right.
But then it is, and people... I remember there's one scene where he kind of enters the chamber of all the heroes, and like no one is sure what to make of him, because he's walking around, he has this big smile, and they know who he is. And he's like picking up their weapons and playing with them, but he doesn't say anything.
It's very creepy.
It is, but honestly, it is my favorite part of the story. And so at the climax, you have those three allegiances. You have Superman and the Justice League. Batman has kind of formed this subgroup of all like the street level heroes, but he's keeping it under wraps and not telling anyone what he plans to do with this own army of his, and then of course the supervillains. And so it all comes to a head at the gulag, because all the prisoners break out and the Justice League arrives to try and suppress them. But this whole time Billy has been like you said, brainwashed, and Batman figures it out. And when he does, he immediately springs into action, because he knows how dangerous this situation is.
Yeah.
And he goes and he chases him down and he tries to tell him, you know, you don't have to be his slave, but it's too late. There's this great scene where basically the mind control worms just spill all over him, and he says the word, he turns into Shazam, and he's off to the gulag. And the reason I like this part of the story so much is because it is like the ultimate showdown. I don't know if in past comics it had ever been depicted that Shazam or Captain Marvel was on the same level as Superman, but in this story, he's considered his equal.
Yeah.
And he shows up, and it's basically like the one-on-one death match of the universe.
It's really the only time in the book that Superman is, you know, when he's physically challenged.
Well, they I'd say they're physically matched, but at one point he keeps using the lightning on him, and I think they play up the magic susceptibility, and he...
Sure.
Is that right?
Yeah, I think so.
He's weakened a lot by the lightning, and it kind of gives Captain Marvel this edge. Meanwhile, Captain Marvel is still not there at all. He's smiling and just fighting his heart out.
Yeah. He doesn't... The only thing he can really, that is going through his mind really is the Lex Luthor brainwashing where he, you know, superheroes are bad. And that's kind of all he has. So I'm going to beat up the biggest superhero. And now that I think about it, it's a weird flip where it's like where Shazam or Captain Marvel was always the adult. But in a weird way, he's almost like kid-like where he's just like, superheroes are bad, gotta fight the superheroes.
Yeah, so the idea behind the mind control is that Lex kept his mind state at that level of a child, and the whole time is telling him that superheroes are bad and the reason you lost people in your life, and he really absorbs that to where there's nothing else.
It's really heartbreaking because there's a scene where Lex is showing him footage of, I think it's from an old Shazam comic, or a Captain Marvel comic, like the panels, I mean, or Alex drew them to look like it, but he's shown, like, this footage of, like, robots killing everybody, whereas in the actual comic, you know, Captain Marvel's there to stop them, and he tries to say this didn't happen, and Lex says, but it could have, you know, because, you know, superheroes got in the way, they should, you know, and they disrupted the natural order of things, and it's I don't know, the scene, you know, where when Batman, you know what you're talking about, when Batman figures out that that it's Billy Batson and he wants to try and talk him, it's such a movie moment.
Yeah, it's a classic
where you think that, like, oh, he's gonna reach out to him, and then the can of worms spills all over him and he turns evil. It's just like that moment in the theater when everybody would go,
know, it's like, drawn like perfectly where I think basically the idea is Lex has been putting these tiny worms in his ear and he's running scared and Bruce is chasing him and trying to talk him down, and he trips and breaks this vat of liquid which spills all over him, and then like 100 worms fall on him and he cannot handle it, and he... You see him start to say it. He's going like shh shh, and then he says it, and then it's on.
The you know, like I was saying before, the, you know, Shazam's the only one that really challenges Superman physically, other than Magog. Although that scene is very short. The other people that challenge Superman, at least to his face, is interesting because it's Batman and Wonder Woman, where. Superman goes to the Batcave and he tries to talk Bruce into joining him, and he's just like, I'm not joining you. Like, you're going about this completely the wrong way. Where Superman says the same thing to him. He's like, you're going about this the wrong way.
Batman is in rare form in this comic, and he's written so well where he's now old. You know, Superman is older, has the gray in his hair, but he's still like a young, powerful man.
He ages slower with his...
Bruce, and I remember when you told me that the way Alex Ross drew him was based on...
Gregory Peck,
and he looks just like him,
but he does.
He looks like an old guy from the Silver Age.
Right.
With this white hair, but he's more like playfully provocative.
Oh, yeah.
Or passive-aggressive, I would say.
One of the things I did want to talk about, thinking about it, you reminded me, thank you, is in terms of, you know, the story being about having lost your faith in humanity, Superman has definitely lost his faith in humanity to the point where he doesn't even want to be called Clark, which is very, very, which is kind of heartbreaking because that's his name. That's what he grew up as. And Bruce keeps calling him Clark.
Mm-hmm.
He says, you know all about hiding, don't you, Clark? And he says, don't call me that. He's like, blah, 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 Clark. And yeah, he always comes.
Oh, it's great.
And it's just that it's like that weird like brotherly best friend antagonistic relationship that I think they've always had. And I always think of Batman and Superman as very much best friends because they're very, very similar. They just go about things very, very differently. And Superman says at one point, you know, the one thing we've always had in common is we do not kill. That's our rule. We've always agreed
on
that.
Yeah, it's the climax, and it's really well written where Superman knows they're probably going to be outnumbered, and like he's already asked Batman for help, I think maybe twice, and Batman's like, no.
Mm-hmm.
And he flies into the cave, like just flies through the ground, and he's in the cave, and he's like, this is enough. I need your help. And Bruce is still like, oh, I don't know what you mean.
Right.
Clark. And then...
And then he just says, you know...
He lays into him says, I think he says, when you scratch away everything that Batman is, you're left with a person that doesn't want to see anyone else die.
Yeah.
And of course, you can see on Bruce's face that that's true. And it's what gets him to join the fight.
That's one of the things I've always loved about the Batman character is the idea of, and I could go on about this, is the idea of this person that lives in darkness but wants to make sure that nobody else ever does. He never wants anyone to suffer the tragedy he suffered. And Superman is sort of the same way, you know, where he comes from genocide. You know, he's the last survivor of Krypton. But it's also that Superman grew up in a safe, loving environment, and he wants to make sure that the world feels that way, that the world can be safe and loving, whereas Batman just wants it to not feel as dark and grim as he feels.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's almost like two opposing ideas where Clark was a part of humanity, which gave him the strength to fight for it. And Bruce has this penance where he feels he has to give up every part of his humanity so that everyone else has a chance.
And the in talking about the humanity of it, the brilliance of it is in the way that Bruce's arc goes through the story where, you know, the Wayne Manor's destroyed and Superman says, what happened? He says, well, my identity got exposed and Bane and Two-Face destroyed the manor. He says, but I have everything I need down here.
Yeah, so he's basically living in the cave under the rubble of Wayne Manor, like completely isolated, probably never leaves.
Right, and it's sad because that's him, in his way, rejecting his humanity. So, you know, he lives under his father's home, and instead of embracing a more human side of things, he embraces the darker side of things as Batman.
Yeah, so if Batman was ever left unchecked, that's probably what he would turn into.
Right. And Wonder Woman has an arc like that as well, where she's very, you know, you find out that she's been exiled from the Amazons. They say that, you know, you were supposed to be ambassador of peace and you failed. And she just kind of in a bad way embraces that, like, yes, I did, you know, there is no peace, there's only war.
Well, I think she's trying, it does affect her, and her solution is that I need to fight harder, and if I had before, this wouldn't have happened.
Right.
And so she is more she's seeing things more clearly than Clark, but she does embrace that warrior mentality. And she gets kind of brutal.
Yeah.
And because Clark is himself not all there, he can't keep her in check.
Yeah. There's really five main stories. You know, there's Norman, there's Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, and in a weird way, kind of Shazam, where, you know, Shazam is sort of the ultimate of it, where he's both superhero and human.
Yeah, I'd say I wouldn't call him a protagonist of the story. He's more of a device. What is it called in a plot when they
Deus Ex Machina?
Yeah, in a way, but because he's a person, they can attribute, you know, thoughts and emotions to him.
Sure.
But, you know, the whole theme that we're talking about here is the faith in humanity. And when Superman realizes he can't beat him, he breaks through to him and leaves the choice up to him.
Yeah, he says, you know, who would you save, the humans or the superhumans? And ultimately, Shazam, what they say later in the book is he sacrifices himself. He takes out the nuclear missile. Well, because there's three that are coming at them. Wonder Woman and Batman take out two of them. Mm-hmm. And then Shazam takes out the third, and it costs him his life. And that's what Clark or Norman kind of realizes. And when he's talking to Clark, he says, he chose life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great scene when there's kind of the rubble of, like, Kansas is once again decimated. I don't know what Alex Ross's problem is with Kansas, but he wanted to destroy it twice.
At the end of the battle, I'd say there's probably 20 or 30 superheroes left.
It's just a handful, yeah. And it's this decimation, and Superman just, and like I said, with that vulnerability, I realized it reading, especially that last chapter, he just snaps and says, you know, screw it. And he, you know, races to the UN, and he's just going to bring the building down. And the Spectre's just like, well, that's it. Judgment's been done. Judgment's been passed. And Norman says, no, it hasn't. It can't end this way. And he, you know, kind of materializes into the UN building. And they had met before because the Flash, going so fast, he can see through dimensions. He saw Norman and pulled him out, and the Justice League questioned him.
Yeah.
So finally Superman sees him again, and he says, you know, who are you? Why are you here? And he says, I'm here to bear witness. You know, I know you're angry, Clark, but you can't be angry at them. You have to understand that you're not a failure, you know, for what happened before. And, you know, when Magog, you know, quote unquote, won back, you know, 10 years ago, and Superman kind of just, he finally calms down, and he says, we've all been going about this the wrong way. Where you saw yourself as beneath us, and we saw, when he's talking to the UN and the humans, he says, you saw yourselves as beneath us, we saw ourselves as above you. We can't do that anymore. We have to be united. So we're not going to fly over you anymore. We're going to walk among you. And it's a really powerful scene. And like I said, you know, you see the vulnerability in Superman, this, you know, this being that is incredibly powerful, kind of humble himself and say, I'm not better than you. And I think that, you know, maybe just having Kansas blown up twice, that's what he needed to learn that. But it's a really powerful statement where he relearns or regains his humanity, which was the, you know, what Norman says, like, that was the biggest part of your character, is your humanity.
Mm-hmm. Source of his strength.
Yes. Yep. And you've lost sight of that. You don't have that anymore. And I think about that a lot. And that's something I think in our, you know, again, comic books having the power to tell these really insane stories, you know, but there's a human side to it. There's a very emotional reality to it. And where it's like, you get that, you know, when you lose your humanity, when you lose your ability to look your fellow person in the eye and see them as an equal, as opposed to seeing them as either above you or beneath you. And, you know, and we're all guilty of it. You know, we look at celebrities as these superstars, or we look at people we don't like as people that are beneath us. Whereas, you know, in this situation, it's presented very, very literal, obviously, where they actually have they literally have power over these people, but then Superman can step down and say, we're not better than you.
Yeah, I suppose when this came out in the late 90s, we didn't have as many superhero movies.
No.
And so we had only the comics, maybe some cartoons, TV shows,
mm-hmm.
that would depict these godly beings. And I think it's a lot easier on the page to suspend your disbelief that people like this could exist.
Mm-hmm.
So now that we have a lot more live action films, you start to pay more attention to, is this how the public would react when all this crazy stuff is happening.
Yeah.
Or it's more relevant. But this story did such a superb job of really trying to show every side, all the heroes, all the villains, and then just all the everyday people, and what sharing the world would really look and feel like.
Right. It's, you know, and it's a, and it starts off so chaotic where, you know, you can't tell the good guys from the bad. And then in the end, it's like there's an equality there. I feel like the colors sort of get brighter as towards the end. And there's a literal moment, we're flipping through it. Oh, wait, that was it. You know, like especially right here with Batman,
yeah.
He rebuilds Wayne Manor to be a hospital for those that were injured in the Kansas fight, and
everything is white.
Yeah, and
the walls, the floors.
Yeah, and there's a line where it says, he's traded in his black for white,
and he's wearing a white T-shirt with the Batman symbol because again, everyone knows he is Batman.
Right, and it's such a, it's such a stark contrast to the rest of the previous bits of the story. And again, going back to, he's regained his humanity. He's rebuilt Wayne Manor to help humanity.
It does end on a very high note. I think there's a scene where superheroes are welcomed into the UN. I think, is it Wonder Woman has a seat?
I think so. Well, Wonder Woman does, and Green Lantern does.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
And then, of course,
and then there's the
aftermath.
Yeah, the epilogue scene. Actually, in terms of the regaining the humanity aspect of it, one bit that I really, really like is that scene right there where Diana gives Clark his glasses. So it's like here he is.
Oh, yeah.
Becoming, like, learning, regaining his humanity. And
it's so heartwarming.
It is. And it's such a beautiful story. And you know, people have been harsh on Man of Steel and Batman vs. Superman for kind of their darker depictions of Superman and Batman. And that's fair. But it's also, I think, you know, your heroes need to go through these trials to become the heroes you need and want them to be. They have to grow. Or else it's you know, because if you were to objectively compare the Christopher Reeve Superman to the Henry Cavill Superman, it's very, you know, he's immediately just this heartwarming, nice guy. Whereas, like,
Man of Steel opens with him, like, lost, not knowing who he is, what he is, or what he should do.
Right. And he gains that throughout the film.
I will throw in, I would love to be welcomed back on the podcast to talk about Man of Steel and Batman vs. Superman.
I definitely want to do that because I love those movies with all my heart. And I know that, you know, like I said, there's people that bash on them, and I really urge them to step back and think of them in a different way. And I think that Kingdom Come is a good example of that, where it starts just very, very bleak and very, like, and Superman is, you know, like we said, his entire look is different. So there's something off about that. Like, it looks cool, but it's off. It doesn't look like Superman. So by the end of it, when he puts his glasses back on, it's like, okay, he can be, maybe not Superman, but he can at least be Clark again. And that's what's important.
Well, I'll just end on that. When I first read it in high school, I was not super well versed in DC characters or the comics. I knew the main ones. I knew the Justice League, and I remember reading it and really not knowing who a lot of people were. And I remember Google searching people or just asking like, "Who is this?" Like, I didn't understand Orion.
Yeah.
I knew he wasn't Darkseid, but I didn't know the dynamic there.
Yeah.
But I think if you've ever been interested in really giving DC a shot or just wanting to read a good story in general, this is a great one to pick up, because you will, I guarantee you will enjoy it just for the trials that these characters go through.
Yeah.
And that faith in humanity.
Yeah, it's very evident in the story, and it's gorgeous. And there's a lot that we can take from it as readers. There's a lot to absorb. And, you know, we've been rereading it almost our whole lives. But I will say, you know, this has been an absolute blast, where this went, you know, I was a little nervous starting.
It happened so fast.
It did. where I was like, okay, so, you know, we're going to talk about this, and this is the topic. We're taking a picture.
Selfies.
Selfies. But
so if you're still listening, thanks for putting up with all of our fanboying.
Well, you know, I think we did it, you know, we were cool about it, where we weren't like, because it would have been easy to just gush about how beautiful the art is or how great the story is, which, you know, which we did a little bit, but it was much more interesting for us to really just dive into the themes of it and to say, this is a very dense story that we can take a lot from and learn from as people on our journey with growing and learning. That's what it's all about. So we're going to sign off now. Thank you so much for joining the first episode of the Four Comic Junkies podcast. We'll see you soon.